Okay, 062343, Flanagan versus the County of Winnebago. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court. As this court is aware, this is a very narrow question, and that is whether my client had a property interest in his continued employment with Animal Services. He was a 15-year employee. He was terminated without any sort of due process, without warning, without any prior warnings or comportment with the procedures set forth in the ordinance.
Could I ask you what steps Mr. Flanagan took, if any, on the spot? He finds out he's going to be fired. And the county, you know, at this stage of the game has said, well, there are grievance procedures, there are other kinds of things that could have happened. Did he even informally, you know, write a letter to somebody or make a phone call or in any way protest this action?
I don't believe so. What my understanding is, he was called into the office at the end of the day without any prior warning, was told that he was terminated, and they escorted him out. He was never told that he had any sort of grievance rights or any rights whatsoever. And in fact, Jim Kelly, who is the human resources person and who is the gentleman who fired Mr. Flanagan, when deposed, said he was unaware of any grievance procedure and stated that he did not ever tell employees who were fired that there was this procedure. Of course, as you know, there was an ordinance in effect at that time which provided for an employee to grieve a termination or other employment matters. But no, Mr. Flanagan was not aware of that whatsoever.
And he didn't spontaneously, I guess, you know, just.
And he didn't spontaneously do anything other than eventually contact an attorney, me, after the fact.
But of course, the existence of grievance procedures doesn't, in and of itself, create a property interest or a job entitlement. The entitlement has to be to the job, not to the procedures, is the general principle in our case law. And as I read your claim, it's essentially one that that argues that a property interest can be created by implication because the cause-like language in the ordinance pertains to other forms of discipline but not termination, and that we should extrapolate from that that there is a for-cause requirement for termination. And I don't know that there's any support in existing case law for the creation of a property interest by implication from for-cause-like language in other contexts than termination.
I don't believe that is the only thing I'm arguing. Certainly, I think that does reflect upon the entire scheme, the entire ordinance, which the court should have looked at and did not look at. The court looked at a specific provision and said, no, this is permissive, this is not mandatory, and I believe that's incorrect. I think the correct process to go through is to look at what the entire ordinance says and gives to the employee.
But, you know, looking at the entire ordinance, I couldn't find any place that just said people in positions like Mr. Flanagan's may be terminated only for cause. Mm-hmm. I mean, it never just comes out and says that.
You're right. It is not clear. However, I will say this. The status quo is that there is employment at will in Illinois. This ordinance purports, I submit, to change the status quo, and there is plenty of language within the ordinance that suggests that there is this for-cause mandate. And this goes back, Your Honor, in answer to your question, For example, in Section 62291, it says, in general, any action or attitude which adversely affects job performance or the reputation of the county government may be cause for disciplinary action. Now, I submit that that may be cause is not permissive in the sense that cause is not required. Cause is required. That suggests cause is required. It's changing the status quo. It must be read, again, if there's any ambiguity, read against the drafter, which is the County of Winnebago.
My question, though, I mean, when I read that, I thought, well, maybe if there were this other sentence somewhere, then it would begin to define what counts as cause. But I think you can equally read the language of 291 as simply alerting employees who are employees at will to the kinds of things that might bring them into disciplinary proceedings. I mean, you're sort of treating this ordinance as though it's a light switch. It's either on or off, you know, totally at will or totally protected. But many employers like to try to meet employees halfway, even though at the end of the day they want to rely on at-will employment.
Well,
that's what this ordinance looks like to me, to be honest.
I agree that is probably what they were intending to do. That would render the ordinance meaningless. If you are going to give employees certain rights, which I submit this does, rights to grievance, rights to certain procedures, rights to a progressive disciplinary system, you can't then say, well, but if we want to do something else, we'll do that. And it's not only...
Well, why not? Just out of curiosity, though, why not? Why can't you describe what your normal way of doing business is going to be, but reserve the right not to do that all the time?
They haven't reserved the right. Again, this has to be read, this has to be construed as a whole, it has to be construed against the drafter. This suggests that there is a cause requirement. It also suggests, as I think you are stating, that there may be different causes. It's not setting forth what is and what is not a cause, but this is setting forth the cause requirement. The suspension paragraph very specifically says cannot without pay any employee for cause. Suspension, that's for cause. In the discharge, for severe violations or repeated previous violations, the department head may discharge an employee. A reasonable employee reading this would have to assume then that they may not be discharged except for severe violations or repeated previous violations. It doesn't use the word cause or for cause, but it sets forth the type of thing that is required for a termination.
And is that what you view as the policy or practice that supports the existence of a mutual understanding between the parties?
Well, this is not looked at in a contract context. So, of course, there wasn't actually any mutual understanding, but yes, if a reasonable employee were to view this, they would, along with the grievance procedures, which were never afforded my client, and along with just the general tenor of the ordinance, would conclude that, yes, there's a for-cause provision. And something that I haven't mentioned, but which is very important, is that they have drawn a distinction between probationary employees and permanent employees. Probationary employees are probationary for the first 90 days. After that, they become permanent employees. Thank you.
Mr. Covanda, good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Gary Covanda. I represent the defendants at police. I believe one thing that I would like to point out is, and I think Judge Reinhardt caught on this, was the statement in the one section regarding suspension dealing with for cause. Counsel would have us read that language as you can be suspended only for cause. It doesn't say only for cause. And Judge Reinhardt in his decision specifically said, because a handbook or an ordinance or a statute or regulation says for cause, that doesn't necessarily mean, if it's not specifically stated as such, that that's only for cause. And he cites
do you think the personnel code would allow a county supervisor to suspend a county worker without cause?
I think in certain circumstances that may be the case. Well, I believe.
Yeah, what kind of circumstances?
Well, depending on. I think the person may be able to be suspended pending an investigation to determine what is the basis of the allegation. But as I said, I think Judge Reinhardt's correctly noted that the ordinance is like the cases that are cited by both of the parties, Border, Boulay, where its language may, should. I think in the Boulay case, which the appellant cited, indicated that supervisors should talk to the employees. Employees should go to counseling. The court determined that wasn't mandatory, that was permissive, just like our ordinance. The statement in.
But your opponent asks, what's the point of having this ordinance if it really isn't worth the paper it's printed on? It says a department head may, as a disciplinary action, suspend without pay any employee for cause. But maybe not. You know, maybe this week you're not in a cause kind of mood, so you just suspend people. I mean, what's the point of this? Isn't it reasonable to think that this is in fact a way of stating a department head has the power to suspend without pay, without cause, and read may in that sense. A department head has the power as a disciplinary action to suspend without pay any employee for cause.
Well, certainly that's what the appellant is arguing. But
and why isn't that reasonable? I mean, why bother to have a paragraph at all? You could accomplish everything you want with an at-will employment system by having no ordinance.
That is true. That is
so
absolutely correct.
What are you doing with this ordinance? And why doesn't it give rise to reasonable inferences?
Well, I believe it says the court also noted in a question, it's a general policy statement for guidance of the employees. And in fact, I believe that is what most of the cases that have been cited by the parties indicate, that it's there for the employees to have some type of a general guidance. The statement, any action or attitude which adversely affects job performance may be cause for disciplinary action, just states the obvious.
Is this ordinance still in effect?
It has never been repealed, so it is still in effect, yes. The one thing about the ordinance, and I believe that was, if you read the depositions closely, there's always comments made by the different officials about the non-bargaining unit versus the bargaining unit. Many years ago, when the Public Labor Relations Act went into effect, there were contract negotiations resulting in collective bargaining agreements, so the vast majority of the county employees are subject to those agreements and not this ordinance. In fact, I'm not sure if at this moment there are more than a handful of people that would be subject to this ordinance, but it is still in effect. Mr. Kelly's deposition on page 54 indicates that after he was terminated, Mr. Flanagan did come to Mr. Kelly and met with him. Mr. Flanagan actually was there with his father. The record does not indicate questions were not asked specifically what was said or not said in that meeting, but there was an indication that he did approach Mr. Kelly. But it is true, Mr. Kelly did not advise Mr. Flanagan of his right to a grievance. However, I think, I don't know that maybe he could have, maybe he should have, but I don't know that that's something he's obligated to do. The section on grievances says the employee must submit something in writing to grieve.
Don't you think it's pretty harsh, though, for the county to essentially have a secret ordinance that nobody knows about and then turn around and blame people for not following it? It's not like you distributed an employee manual to people that said, you know, even take a look at the ordinance, much less. It's not that long. It's here in the appendix to these briefs. It really seems like the law doesn't prohibit you from having bad employment practices, but But it's a bad employment practice to have secret procedures.
Well, I would say to the court that if it is an ordinance and the county is bound by it because we have never repealed it, then it's just like any other ordinance or any other law. People are presumed to know it. And I frankly don't know why this is still in effect since we have the collective bargaining agreements with the other employees. Perhaps it is for those few who would not be subject to the collective bargaining agreement.
Now, are you standing here and telling me that you personally have memorized the entire Winnebago County Code?
I have not, no. I could never do that. And there are too many things in there that are archaic. I know there's a section on septic systems and things, and it still refers to cesspools, which I think are illegal. So there are sections of that code which are sorely outdated, and I would be the first to say that it does need revision. And certainly this chapter would need to be revised. But I believe that the point of the language in here is that it's all permissive. It's all may do this, should do this. Following the cases that we have cited, that permissive language in a handbook, which is very similar to the principles for an ordinance, are that that does not create a property interest in continued employment and abrogate the employment at will document.
Does the record here have evidence about how other people who the county has discharged who are not in that collective bargaining agreement group were handled?
I do not recall that. I do not think there are.
Maybe there aren't very many of them, but I just wondered.
Yes, no, I do not believe there's anything like that in the record. So for the reasons that I have stated and also in the brief, the defendants believe that Mr. Flanagan was an employee at will, that the record shows that, and that Judge Reinhardt's decision was proper and should be affirmed. Thank you.
Ms. Bellman?
I believe I'm out of time, but
I'm going to give you.
Thank you. Counsel suggested that everything in the ordinance was permissive. That is not true. And if you look at sections 4 and 5, you'll see that for both a suspension and a discharge, prior to either one of those actions being taken, the directors, respective directors have to be consulted, and in the event of a discharge, not only the director, but the civil division of the state's attorney's office. And that's important because that suggests that there's something that they're concerned about complying with. Cause, for example. In Perman versus Ark Adventures, an Illinois case, addresses that issue. In that case, I think, was cited in this court's recent Moss v. Martin case, and talks about the discretion that is, or lack thereof. And I suggest there is a lack of discretion. It is not it's not at will. It's not for any reason. There must be some for cause, and it must be for discharge approved. Any further questions? Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Thanks very much to both counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement.